and welcome to The Disciplined Investor. This is Andrew Horowitz, your host, and I am really happy you're here today because we have lots to talk about. It's a really good podcast, a really good show today. I think that episode 12, which we are on now, is going to really give you some good insight into how to protect your portfolio, because I've been really focused on that over the last few podcasts, the last few posts that I've made on my blog. If you haven't had the opportunity to go to the blog, that's thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Updates every day on stocks, some good ideas on how to invest, on how to protect yourself, protect your portfolio, making sure that you are, in fact, in the right place at the right time, because this market moves very quickly these days. I mean, we are seeing things all over the place. Today, we're going to be talking about some things that are going to help you protect your portfolio. We're going to talk about portfolio hedging. We're going to talk about some shorting strategies. We have an interview coming up in just a few minutes with David Riley, who is the lead portfolio strategist for RIDEX Funds. And I hope he's going to share with us some ideas on how to protect the portfolio, because they have a great, great set of funds that provide only not only the market neutral area, but they also provide the area of inverse funds, so that if the markets move, let's say, down 10%, well, these funds will move up 10%. And I love the idea of making money if the markets move down. Nothing better than seeing the market moving down and making money just as well as when my portfolio moves up, when the market moves up. I want to cover both sides. How to do that? We're going to show you how. We're also going to talk about a little bit about the book, slated to be released June 30th now. We just got a note from the publisher on that, The Disciplined Investor. We're going to be starting to take advanced orders very soon. And of course, we'll take a question or two at the end of this that we received, and we'll answer that very quickly. So do me a favor, sit back, relax, because The Disciplined Investor is starting right now.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
All right, so here we are on the Disciplined Investor Podcast. For those of you that are joining me the first time, hey, welcome aboard. Hopefully, we're going to give you some good ideas on how to invest. You'll subscribe and you'll make some money, and you're going to be along with us for the ride for a while. And those of you who have been around on this ride for a while, hey, thanks a lot, because you know, it's what makes this successful is people like you. So I want to thank you very much. For those of you that haven't had the opportunity to, I want to let you know the blog is open, waiting your comments on all sorts of areas in investing from any discipline, maybe technical analysis and quantitative analysis. I write on things every day. And I think that you'll find it interesting. If you haven't had the opportunity to go to the blog, it's thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Take a look. Make sure to put that in your RSS subscription or just bookmark it, because you'll find some real gems in there. I talked about the value you click on there in depth, even though I talked about it a few podcasts ago, and I think you'll get some really great ideas. So let's get into the discussion today, because I think there's some important things we're going to talk about. The market has been absolutely, just on fire. I mean, there's nothing, no other way to describe it. Now, that's the markets. That doesn't mean individual securities. That doesn't mean individual mutual funds, but the markets have been on fire. That's great. If you have mutual funds, if you're broad-based, that's terrific. If, on the other hand, you've been a little bit more selective, you may not have been having appreciation, either personal appreciation or market appreciation, for this current market condition. So I want to make sure that you are safe, though, with the next coming leg of this, because no market goes up straight. It doesn't continually go up. And I am not going to stand here and say, or sit here for that matter, and say, hey, you know what? Put it all in, because I never want to see you fully invested in any market. That could be the real estate market. That could be the stock market, the bond market. It could be the commodity market. I never want to see a full investment allocation to anyone, because you will find that while you'll have great ups, you're going to have miserable, miserable downs. That could be shown time and time again. 1987, 2000, 2004. We'll see 1994. You see the real estate market of the 80s, and then again the real estate market of 2006 through 2007. We saw when there was a time when diamonds were relatively worthless. We saw when gold was down in the dumps. We see when oil was worth nothing, and then it turns around. Realize that the markets, every single market, is cyclical. Say it to yourself. The markets are cyclical. If you get that and really internalize that, what you'll want to do is next think about hedging. Now, hedging doesn't have to be something that is very intense. It doesn't have to be something very complicated. And as I talked about, in just a couple of minutes, we're going to have David Riley from the RIDEX funds, and hopefully he's going to talk about some of these hedging strategies in more detail. What you can do is very simply either buy securities that will work contrary to the markets. So in other words, there are these funds, there are individual ETFs, there are some stocks that will work in an opposite manner. If the markets move up, these will move down. If the markets move down, these will move up. Now, why would you want something like this? Again, the main component here is that you don't have all your eggs in one basket, to use that simple phrase that we all know so well. What you want to do is you want to make sure that you are well-balanced. But well-balanced does not only mean in 20 different stocks and 5 different mutual funds. Well-balanced also means that in the time when the markets are going down, besides the opportunity just to sell out, because who knows if you could be that good of a market timer, that something in your portfolio is performing. And what you could do is you could find these market inverse mutual funds, add those to your portfolio. At this time, put certain commodities, maybe gold, in your portfolio at this point. Look to some of the reality. Step back for a minute and say, you know what, this market is moving way too fast. What can I do about it? Because it's not going to go straight up. It is not going to continue on a straight line to the stars. I don't think you believe it. I don't think anybody that you know believes it. Even if they want to say, oh yeah, it's going up, it's great. The fact is, you know it. There is going to be a time we're going to see a correction. It may not be tomorrow, may not be in a month, but I'll tell you something. There are things out there right now that are driving me a little bit crazy. Some of the things, like the rumors that we're hearing in the markets of acquisitions, which are unsubstantiated. We're seeing time and time again whisper numbers be released from various sources that are incorrect on earnings releases and announcements. Sometimes what we're even seeing is the various buy and sell signals being quite questionable when it comes from many of the different, well, we'll say less reliable websites. I want you to pay attention to that. Don't be suckered. Do not be suckered in, because this is your hard-earned money that we're talking about. So hedging is a great idea right now. We're going to talk about that in further detail with David Riley in just a minute. Finally, what I want to talk about before we get into that discussion, because it's about time for we get on with that, is that what you want to look for right now in these markets is an opportunity to make sure that you have some sell stops in your portfolio set up correctly, so that if the markets move down, you are well protected. Now, I'm not going to harp on this, because I've talked on this maybe the last 2 podcasts now. I've touched on this or talked about this idea of hedging your portfolio and making sure you have some safety valves in it, because you don't have to be out of the market right now, but there are some precautions you could take. So make sure that you are paying attention right now. Don't let things just go on autopilot, and do your best to ensure that you are well diversified. That's the bottom line here. So we're going to get into a discussion with David Riley, and I think you'll find that, hopefully I'm going to find that interesting. You'll find that interesting. And then we're going to answer a couple of questions from some viewers or some podcast listeners, I guess, that have sent in some questions. Actually, we have 2 from the website. If you want to put in a question, if you want to ask me something, and I encourage you to go to the website, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, and comment on the blog entries. But you could also send me an email to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. And if you do, I'm going to put it on the air. If it's something that I think that will be interesting to everybody, or I'll just personally answer you back. And then we'll get to it right there and give you hopefully some real good guidance. So with that, we'll be back in 15 seconds, and we'll pick up with the interview with David Riley.
Did you know that you can receive regular updates on finance, stocks, funds, and other investment ideas? Just go to thedisciplinedinvestor.com/blog and subscribe.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager.
All right, welcome back. And today, as promised, we are with David Riley, who is the Director of Portfolio Strategies for RIDEX Funds, a fun group that has been around for some time. And I thought what we would do is talk with David about portfolio protection strategies. So that sound good to you, David?
Yes, that sounds great. Thank you, Andrew.
So to tell me a little bit. First, let's start with, you know, you've been there since about 2004, I know. And what is the overall concept with RIDEX Funds?
We have specialized, really since our inception in 1993, at taking what are often called institutional investment strategies or non-traditional asset classes and making them available to the retail investor. making them available usually distills down to packaging these strategies in open-ended mutual fund or now increasingly exchange-traded fund formats to give access to the retail investor without the typical problems they have come up against in institutional investment strategies, such as high minimums, accredited investor rules, very high cost structures, and offer them the transparency, daily liquidity, and ease of use of mutual funds and exchange-traded fund formats.
So this came about, I think the reason that you were able to do this, because for a while there was no shorting allowed, and a lot of the strategies that you do today, I don't think were allowed for many years with mutual funds, right?
Right. We've been a pioneer for many years now in making available to the investor asset classes, investment techniques, and strategies that have pretty much been off limits. So our kind of stock and trade is basically figuring out how to make these available by making them open-ended and letting the investor use them. And increasingly, we have devoted a lot of attention to how an investor would use these non-traditional investment techniques, basically to improve the characteristics of their portfolio. By improving the characteristics, usually what we mean are, one, enhancing return, and two, and perhaps more importantly, is controlling risk at the portfolio level.
Yeah, that's what I want to get to, because I have been talking a lot about this volatility in the current market that we're in now, and we've seen just a broad range of reasons why, whether it's the fact that on the downside back in February we saw the Shanghai market move substantially lower in the end of February and we had this big sell-off, or whether the speculation is driving these markets higher like it is right now from rumors of buyouts, LBO takeovers, mergers, acquisitions, whatever it is. My concern now is, how do we make sure that, yeah, we can get the upside here of the markets, but to protect ourselves? And I think that you have, you know, one of the things that I've seen is that you have a few different funds and strategies. So can you tell us a little bit about that? Because that's I think, what we want to really focus on.
Sure. Well, let's start at the very beginning. Usually when people use the expression protecting themselves against risk, they usually mean equity market or stock market risk.
Yeah, surely.
They're trying to guard against expected or anticipated volatility in stocks going forward. And broadly speaking, there are two ways to do that. One way is to simply hedge your equity risk, and hedging usually involves shorting in one way, shape, or form. Now, that doesn't mean that the investor has to go out and short individual stocks or start using index puts, but there are a number of funds out there, and certainly we're a leader in this, that funds that offer an inverse relationship to the stock market. It's often called bear market funds. That is, when stocks go down, these funds are designed to go up in some relationship to the market. It could be a one-for-one relationationship, or it could be a magnified relationship.
Let me interrupt you for a second, because I want to dumb this down for a second. So we talk about shorting stocks, okay? And not everybody really understands this. In fact, when I explain this to people, a lot of times who don't understand this, I see the whites of their eyes, and their eyes start rolling back in their head. And let's just explain it and leave this simply, that when you short a stock, it means that you're going to essentially profit when the stock or the market that you shorted goes down. And without all the nitty-gritty details of how this happens, the bottom line is that you're selling in advance of the buy, and you profit if it goes down. So it's the opposite of a buy, right?
Right. It's a very simple concept, actually. What you're doing is you're borrowing the stock and selling it to somebody else, and if it goes down, you get a chance to repurchase it later since you borrowed it at a lower cost.
Okay.
That's the essence of shorting.
Right.
Now, that basic technique has been expanded over the years to apply to all sorts of asset classes, investment vehicles, indexes, and so on and so forth. And there are funds that enable that do this relative to the market. We have an inverse S&P fund, so it's designed to perform inversely to the S&P. So if the S&P goes down 1% in a day, the fund is designed to go up 1%, and it uses variations on shorting techniques. So that's basically what it's all about, and that's a very direct way of, quote, hedging your equity market exposure.
Right.
The other broad way to do it is to simply start to introduce investment vehicles into your portfolio that don't move in sync with equities, that react to different things. The jargon for that in the industry is called correlation. You're introducing non-correlated assets into the portfolio. A great way to think of this are bonds. Now, historically, bonds have a negative correlation with stocks. So if you're worried about stocks going down, taking some money off the stock market table and allocating it to bonds was one way to protect the value of your portfolio.
Right.
what's happened over the years and what we've been a pioneer in is also introducing additional non-correlated assets to the retail investor. They can be things such as real estate exposure, commodity exposure, or they could be investment strategies that focus on absolute return, that is to generate some positive return over time, regardless of what the stock market is doing.
Right. So I guess the big issue here, though, is when I think of I just wanted to bring it back one point here. You know, when you think of traditional hedging, you know, people are always really nervous about they're going to lose money on their hedge. And what I always say is, you know, hedging is portfolio insurance. Hedging is just a protective measure oftentimes. And I smile when we lose money on our hedge, because that only means that the rest of my portfolio is doing so well, right?
Right.
So I think that, you know, the hedge is a smaller component of the portfolio. And don't misunderstand that. Yes, you can say, oh, I think the market's going to do this, and then go into one of these funds or a short position and try to time the market, which I just do not think works well personally, which we'll get your feelings on in a minute, David. But the fact of the matter is that here we're protecting it so that if the downside does come, at least some of it is protected. You know, your funds, are they? I assume they are used by market timers, right?
They're used both by active investment advisors and more strategic investment advisors. So we really cover the waterfront in terms of types of users.
Have you done any significant research on market timing and the ability to actually time the markets and make that work?
Well, it's a devilishly difficult thing to do over a very long-term time horizon. It's very difficult to get timing decisions consistently right. And that's the essential criticism of market timing. In a shorter term, some investors have success with it, some more than others. But, you know, getting back to the idea of hedging, hedging is different than timing the market. And the reason hedging is often overlooked is really kind of a shame, because when you think about it, it's probably the most important part about long-term investing. And what I mean by that is that holding on to your portfolio gains is more important finding the winners. And people tend to think about investing as finding those stocks or funds or asset classes that are going to go up. But in reality, when you look at the arithmetic, it's holding on to the gains which is much more important in terms of an investor's ability to reach his or her investment goals. And what I mean by that is just think about the basic arithmetic of returns. If you own something that goes down 50%, that asset has to go up 100% basically to get back to your starting point.
Yeah, you know, David, so, what I do is with people, I give them this analogy. I say you want your portfolio to act like a skyscraper. You know, you walk in a city and you walk into the elevator of a skyscraper, and you see the elevator and they have maybe two or three or four floors down. You know, the lobby, the lower lobby, the garage, the lower garage. But on the way up, there's maybe 100 floors. And you want your portfolio to have limited downside as best as possible, and, you know, as much upside as possible. So think of it like that, whereas you stifle the loss, you constrain the loss, and you allow the top end to run. And that's, I think, the real goal of hedging, is to make sure that you're not going to get yourself into so much trouble that you have to dig yourself out of a hole and come back in such a way of making 100% just to get back to even.
Yeah, the baseball analogy is a good one. What you want to do is hit singles and doubles, maybe an occasional triple, but hold on to what you've maintained, and that's how an investor is going to reach their investment objective going forward. The jargon for use is you want to be able to preserve the compounding rate of the portfolio or the earnings rate, and you can't do that if you every once in a while experience these huge downdrafts in portfolio value. One very tried and true way to do that is introduce non-traditional asset classes, such as the things we talked about a moment ago, into the portfolio. So when stocks go down, not everything in your portfolio goes down with it. You know, a lot of investors think of diversification along the following lines, that if I've got, you know, allocations to big stocks, small stocks, mid caps, you know, growth style, value style, blend, a little smattering of international, I've got a diversified portfolio. The problem with that is that when stocks go down into, you know, these periodic swoons that we see every few years in the markets, stocks go down. And it doesn't really matter whether they're large, mid, or small, or growth or value, they just go down. So it's important to have other assets in the portfolio, other financial assets that don't participate in those downdrafts.
As an investor, how do I decide how much you know, I mean, do I hedge a lot? Do I hedge a little? What asset class do I put in? Can you give me some names of specific funds? I don't know if you can do that or not, but tell me some funds that, for as examples, not as recommendations, but as examples of what they do. You mentioned the negatively correlated S&P fund, for example. What other asset classes are there?
Sure. Well, let me start off with asset classes. Historically, commodity exposure and real estate exposure have offered low or negative correlation with stocks. So those are two asset classes that can be accessed in mutual funds that gives real strong diversification benefits to the portfolio. Remember, this is about controlling risk. Other vehicles that are available to the investor are increasingly mutual funds that mimic hedge fund strategies. Now, why would you want to do that? The reason you want to do that is because hedge funds often pursue what is called an absolute return investment objective.
I call that positive alpha.
Right. That is, even if stocks are doing poorly, the manager will go somewhere else to see if they can generate positive returns. It could be international debt markets. It could be some sort of merger arbitrage. It could be currency exposure. It could be commodity exposure. It can be any multitude of things. But the idea isn't just to suffer through a stock market decline, but look for additional sources of return.
Good.
We offer a fund called the RightX Absolute Return Strategy Fund, which does exactly that. Historically, those sorts of investment strategies have been really the domain of institutional investors or very high net worth investors and have been difficult for retail investors to access. Increasingly, those are now available as open-ended funds, so anybody can include them into their portfolio. And when they do that, they're helping to reduce the overall volatility of the portfolio. That is, managed risk better, and that's really what it's all about.
And is that considered a market-neutral fund, that particular fund?
No, but it has market neutral exposures in it. It really tries to mimic the overall, or what is called the multi-strategy hedge fund universe,
right,
part of which is market neutral. We have a series of four or five market neutral exposures in that fund, and that we also have a hedged equity fund, which isn't market neutral exactly, but it has more of a market neutral flavor to it.
So this is almost your best ideas of a fund of funds, of a fund of a hedge fund, I should say, to give you the positive alpha.
Well, we think the way to go is the fund of hedge fund idea was an interesting one. But when you think about hedge funds for the investor, the idea of them has been better than the reality. And what I mean by that is that there historically have been so many structural impediments to hedge fund investing: high fees, lockup periods, accredited investor rules.
Right.
And the fund of hedge funds doesn't really address any of those. All the structural impediments still exist.
Yeah.
And in fact, you've now got another layer of fees on top of it.
Right.
What open-ended hedge funds tend to do, or funds that replicate hedge fund return streams, which is what ours does, is to mimic the investment exposures that hedge funds pursue, but do it in an open-ended structure that brings the cost way down, and you get daily liquidity and daily transparency, quarterly transparency. So we think that's the way to go, and we think increasingly you're going to see more and more of that as the industry evolves.
And let me switch gears for a second and talk to you about indexing, or conceptually indexing. You have many funds that are index related, right?
That's correct.
Okay. And you don't have any actively managed funds at all, right?
We're quantitative managers, sure, but we're also active managers. Now, what I mean by that is we use active investment techniques to really try and enhance the returns of the underlying index just a little bit. But it's all within a very risk-controlled format.
Okay, so you're not looking to, as we said in the baseball analogy, you're never looking to really hit a home run. The fact is that you're trying to manage risk on a consistent basis across your entire portfolio, not only on a basic portfolio, but on your entire range of funds that you manage.
That's correct. We're not stock pickers in the classical sense.
Right.
We're trying to identify stocks that are going to do really well, or identify stocks that will do very poorly, and then short them. What we're trying to deliver to the investor are basic characteristics of the underlying indices, which then they can go long, they can go short, they can double up or double down on. And increasingly, we are also replicating the characteristics of non-traditional indices, such as hedge funds, as we were just discussing.
So let me ask you this for the average investor out there who, for a moment, doesn't have an advisor, and he wants to, or she wants to, build a portfolio, and they say, you know, it's a good idea, I'm listening to this, I want to do some hedging, because why not, it makes some sense. How do they go about figuring out what the appropriate amount of hedging is, how much they should have? You know, let's assume for the moment, they have 100% S&P 500 just for the moment. And, you know, how do they figure that out? What fund, you know, is there, I know you have something called the real rate of return calculator. Is that, or is it something else maybe you have that you help investors out with?
It's the RIDEX real returns calculator. Let me back it up just a second. We think the best way for investors to wrestle with these questions is to seek out an investment advisor. But beyond that, the basic industry approach is correct. It's just the execution which comes up short. The basic industry approach is to help the investor figure out what level of portfolio volatility is appropriate for them. How big a downdraft can they stomach in a given year? Is it 5%? Is it 10%? Is it 15%?
Mm-hmm.
And then structure a portfolio that it seeks to not exceed that limit.
Right.
Now, we also offer, as you just alluded to on our website, a tool called the RIDEX Real Returns Calculator, which lets investment advisors enter client portfolios into the application directly and then make hypothetical allocations to all the things we've been talking about,
right.
Inverse equity mutual funds, open-ended hedge funds, non-traditional asset classes such as commodities, real estate, managed futures, and see how the potential introduction of those strategies changes the characteristics of that portfolio, both from an expected return but also a volatility standpoint. So they can get comfortable with how they're changing the portfolio. And in most instances, by introducing these things, more often than not, they're reducing the risk of the portfolio.
Right.
Then the question is simply, how much do they want to reduce the risk?
I caught in the beginning, is that only available to advisors or is that available to the average investor out there?
That is only available to investment advisors at this point, and that's why I mentioned earlier that
right.
We think the best way to go is to seek out an investment advisor.
Well, I mean, I think that as well, and when I say it, though, it's obviously coming from a place that may seem a little bit biased, but I think that, you know, as a matter of fact, as I think I told you earlier, I have the book coming out called The Disciplined Investor, which is at the publisher and printing right now, and one of the things I talk about continually is how do you implement a plan? What's the best way to do it? And somehow, a lot of times individuals, I think, believe that they can do it themselves, which is fine. But more often than not, they end up in the hands of an advisor eventually because they realize it's not something that you could just, you know, leave aside and just let go, that there is a maintenance involved, you know, some degree of maintenance involved in it. And by utilizing an advisor, at least you have some oversight. But obviously, at the same time, make sure that you don't have paying extraordinary fees on the whole process. You know, because you put a layer of what you, like you mentioned, the hedge fund and then the advisor to the hedge fund and the advisor to the hedge fund. And then by the time you're, you know, you got a 4% fee structure by the time you're done. And you can't make money doing that.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, what it comes down to is that for most people, this is important business. And seeking out professional advice, we think, just makes a ton of sense.
Okay. What do you also in your grouping have a – we'll end on this point. But do you have a group – an idea of – or at least a speculation on where the markets are going? Not specifically right at this moment, but generally, you know, do you quantify that measurement to give recommendations when you work with these advisors?
We're not in the business of making market calls per se, but at the end of the day, we're an investment advisory firm or investment manager, so we obviously do look at the market and we do have views on the market. And obviously, you know, over the past couple of months, really since the February and early March sell-off, the market has been on an absolute tear, but there's no question the economy is slowing and with it corporate earnings. So we wouldn't be surprised to see a little bit of a pullback as we look forward.
Mm-hmm.
But as you look forward beyond that more immediate outlook, we think that it's possible that stocks could continue to move up for a bit here, particularly if the Fed turns around and starts to reduce rates at some point going forward. In our current market update, we expect or anticipate that the Fed might start to ease rates as we get later into 2007, certainly not earlier than that.
Yeah.
And if that does indeed happen, the stocks could move up a bit from there. But near term, the market has just rallied so strongly. It's been such a powerful rally that we wouldn't be surprised to see stocks pull back and regroup here a little bit.
Yeah, and I'll tell you right now that from what I've seen about this market right now, it is definitely more of a market driven rally rather than an individual stock. And I know that sounds to most people a little counterintuitive. How is that possible? But what we have seen is, what at least I've seen, is it is very much hit or miss, but yet the markets, the Dow as an example, has done extraordinarily well. 30 stocks, S&P 500 has done well, obviously, but there's pockets of areas that have not done as well, and some areas that have really been a concern. And the biggest run-up these days have been the short sellers who have been getting squeezed due to rumors. And I think these blogs, podcasts, things like this, I'll be honest with you, have had an interesting effect on the rumor mill. Because almost anybody right now can essentially become an expert. And I've talked about this over and over time. And I hope that I'm not one of them that is, you know, pontificating and creating these platforms that only does these strange things to the markets. I think it skews it.
Right. We think it's important to keep the distinction between kind of a shorter term outlook and what we call investing. And much of what we've talked about on this call has been investing. That is,
right.
How do I structure a portfolio that protects my value, that generates a level of volatility that I'm comfortable with, you know, over a multi-year time frame? Inside of that are, you know, more immediate considerations about where you think the market's going to be heading over the next quarter or 6 months.
Okay. And finally, you mentioned the market letter. How do people get a hold of that, the market letter? Is that just for clients?
Actually, that is really internal right now.
Okay.
But we talk about our market view with lots of advisors. So, again, I'm going to sound like a broken record here. Talk to your advisor, and if that advisor works with RIDEX, they have access to that.
Okay. What I'm going to do is put a link in our show notes to at least your site, and then people can take a look at what's going on there. And maybe we could follow us up in some time and figure out how to best invest for people and continue to give them some good advice. So I appreciate your time today.
Thank you very much.
All right, so we're going to answer some questions. We call it the mailbag section, and from time to time we do this. And again, if you do have a question, I want you to do me a favor. Send it in to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. So we're going to answer a couple of them here that I picked out, and the first one that I found was from Robert K. in Memphis. And Robert writes, he says, I enjoy your show very much, and I wanted to ask you a question that has been troubling me for some time. I've been investing in mutual funds, and there is this 12b1 fee that has been coming up time and time again. Can you explain this and explain how this affects me? All right. 12b1 fees. 12b1 fees are a distribution fee. They're an internal fee above and beyond the management fee that is essentially billed on your mutual fund. And Robert, what you want to do is you want to find out what the overall expenses of the mutual fund are. Because when you look at the mutual fund, what you'll find is that there's usually some kind of a load, if it's a what we call a loaded fund, either front end or a back end where you have to pay if you get out early. In addition, there's an annual internal management fee. One more thing. Sometimes these funds have, along with it, what we call the 12b1 fees. And they're what we consider the distribution cost. Maybe it's because they're on a network like Fidelity, Schwab, E-Trade, or some other network that they have to add a cost in order to distribute the fund. There could be ancillary fees in there. Usually these aren't very much, but you have to be careful because what I have found is every little bit counts. If you think about it for a second, if you have $100,000 invested and you pay a 1% additional fee on an annual basis, at the end of 15 years, you've paid $15,000 plus the compounded interest of you that you may have lost. You're talking maybe $20,000. So think about 12b1s as an additional distribution cost that you're paying for the distribution of the fund. Now, how fair is it that you're paying it? That's another question. Why should you pay it? You should be thankful and maybe ask them for a little bit of a refund because you're actually paying for some of the advertising. So thanks for your question, Robert, and keep on listening. I appreciate it. All right, the next question is from Isaac D., actually right here in Florida. Hey, how are you? That's what this is, by the way, originating, gang. We're in Florida here. And Isaac writes, I've been listening to your podcast, and you've been talking about sell stops, talking about hedging, and all sorts of other areas to consider when I'm thinking about investing and saving my portfolio from losses. Did I say all that? Anyway, Isaac, he continues and he writes, he says, you know, what is the explanation of sell stops? How do I use them? And what is the best way to explain this to my broker? Isaac, hopefully your broker can explain this to you, first of all, okay? But sell stops essentially are this. If you have the opportunity to own a stock and that stock is moving up, okay? And let's say that stock is at $25 per share. And you don't want to sell it, but you're worried about it losing money and you want to do something to make sure you don't lose money moving forward. What you can do is this. You can say to your broker, I would like to sell the stock if it goes below, let's just say, $24 per share. If it goes below $24 a share, I want you to automatically put in an order to sell the stock right then and there. And in matter of fact, I don't want to think about it. So I want you to keep that good for 30, 60, 90 days, depending on what your brokerage arrangement is. Usually it's about 60 days of the good till cancel orders. We call them good till cancel rather than day, by the way. And the difference is that a day order just is good for a day, and a good till cancel is good for 60 days. So the sell stop, when it comes to the position, actually can be done in a few ways. We have a sell stop, and not to get too complicated, but a sell stop limit. And that says that, well, I want to sell for 24, but not below 24. The sell stop says I want to sell for 24 if it gets down there, if it moves down to that point. And as soon as it hits 24, make it a market order. So Isaac, a sell stop, essentially what it does for you is this. It gives you the ability to put the position on autopilot to make sure that if you, in fact, the market or that stock moves away from you, it will maintain its position and not go below a certain point that you have automatically set up. Your broker should be able to set that up for you very easily. And I think that's a really good idea for you to do on some of your positions to make sure that you don't lose out in the long haul. So thanks for your questions. Those two questions were great. And next podcast, hopefully we'll answer a few more. Again, write to askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Once again, thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Go to the iTunes network. You know how important that is to me to be up on that list. And please do me a favor, kindly, leave some feedback for me. Just go to the iTunes and go to the area that says The Disciplined Investor, and there's a feedback button. You can put your review and your feedback and give me some review and feedback. I'd appreciate it. Until next time, we're going to have some interesting things coming up, I believe. We're going to start working on the disciplines. That's the next thing. So get out your pencil, get out your paper. We're going to start talking about the 7 strategies for successful investing. And that's all part of The Disciplined Investor's book, which is mine, of course. And it talks about how we can actually utilize the different strategies to be successful in investing. I think you're going to find it very interesting. We start that next podcast. So until next time, I wish you a lot of luck in the markets. Be careful, be diversified, be safe, and I'll see you real soon. Thanks again. Have a great day.
The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contain forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor regulated by the SEC. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing.
Hey, thanks for listening to today's podcast. We'll be here next time. Keep the emails coming in and be sure to subscribe.